I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
A dub is a dub, you know, hard or easy. So today wasn't easy. You know, just pulled it out faster, you know. So I definitely think that needed to, you know, show that we can win early. But, you know, that was great.
That's C.J. Stroud Sunday after the Texans took down the New England Patriots 41-21. But guess what? That game's in the past. The Texans, they're not 5-1 for the first time since 2012. They're 0-0. And they're on to Green Bay. And Jordan Love, they'll play them on Sunday. The last place Green Bay Packers. I can't wait for that next week. I can't wait for, say, the Houston Texans win that game. I can't wait for the same folks who normally do this to say, well, it'd be the last place team. You would be right. I'm giving you free ammunition to zag against the Texans' success. I'm giving it to you. I appreciate the haters, right? The haters are fun. As a hater myself, I'm not doing timeout to hatred. I'm not part of that. I refuse to be a part of that. I am never going to do that. There are too many things in the world that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
So hatred for me, oh, it's staying.
Okay. So Robert Kraft can't get you. Mr. Kraft, I'm sorry. Mr. Kraft can't get you in the next campaign.
Did he do a time? Was he one of the people that held up a teacher timeout?
I thought he was like the... Like, he's part of the board of directors or whatever.
I saw Shaq. I know, yeah. That's the one that's become most popular.
Shaq and Doc Rivers doing it. That's going to – I'm just going to call the shot. That's going to be more popular in basketball season, probably closer to the second round of the playoffs.
100%.
When the Bucks are up 3-2 and losing.
Inevitably blow it, yes. So, a couple of comments before I dive into an impromptu segment. The Twitch is obsessed with my sex life. They probably care about it more than I do, and honestly, maybe I should turn it over to them because I'm just not doing so well with it. But Asymmetric Risk asked earlier, what's a good name for a poly date segment? It's about time. We'll work on that. King of all Twitches responded saying, Paulie has dedicated his life to the Texans and celibacy. That is true. It does feel that way of late on Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. By the way, no joke, he'll be back on Monday. I got nothing for you. Everybody that's an option is a long-distance option, whether it's the Woodlands, we'll see how that one goes, been almost a month, or somebody I met a couple of weeks ago who lives in Tampa Bay. I have low-key been saying, well, hey, there's less hurricane devastation here.
Yeah, a lot of people from Katrina moved to Houston.
So I'm not kidding. I've subtly done that. And also, this might be out of bounds, but one of my good friends growing up, his little sister. Is that weird? I don't know.
Depends, but yeah.
This person DM'd me. So this was not me initiating it, but again, not living anywhere close to where I live. So this is probably just a harmless flirtation. Not on any of the apps, none of that stuff.
We'll come up. I'll brainstorm some names. for the segment.
Since we're talking about dating apps, impromptu idea here. I wanted to properly power rank the Houston Texans in the NFL. And I know I've said they're actually 0-0, not 5-1. But maybe this is how we do it. Maybe we tier the entire NFL based off of dating apps. So at the bottom, in terms of my overall experience, you got Tinder. Tinder is just an absolutely godforsaken place. And I feel like everybody on it is either a bot or a prostitute or somebody who is trying to redirect you to their OnlyFans. So that's the Jaguars. That's the Panthers. That's the Patriots. That's the Browns. That's the Titans. That's the Giants. That's the Jets. That's the Raiders. And to a degree, the Dolphins. The Dolphins are kind of out of it, but that's at the absolute bottom. The depths. Second worst app in terms of my overall experience on it. This is Bumble. Bumble back in the day. This was the bee's knees. See what I did there? This app is no longer as good as it used to be. It's not. But at least it's straight and to the point. You know what you're getting with it. Bumble has become the new Tinder. Bumble is the, let's do a little hanky-panky app. And these are the teams that are a tier above Tinder. They're not an embarrassment.
Yeah, they're having fun, but no attachments.
That would be the Rams, who are 1-4. That is surprising to see that record attached to them. Like, you know they're better than this, but they're injured. The Saints, Cardinals, Bengals, the Dolphins, if Tua comes back. Hell, I'll put the Cowboys here just to be nice. Do we put the Broncos there? Do we put the Eagles there?
But they're not having a... Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like
Eagles hire Broncos in this one.
Okay.
Just gut
higher
feeling.
Than this tier. Okay. Yeah. That's totally fair. So the next tier, Hinge. For those who don't know, if you've ever been on Hinge, Hinge is the app that is designed to be deleted. What's ironic about that is that you are never going to see anyone attractive unless you pay on this app. You just won't. This has been proven true.
That's crazy.
You will not.
What an idea for an app.
They keep people on, and you spend so much time on the app, and you're just, as someone who's way too picky, who's definitely not as good looking as he believes himself to be and believes that I deserve a supermodel. I've spent a very long time on that app sometimes looking for love in all the wrong places because it's not about looks. It's about values and being able to be someone's best friend. But your boy is stupid and thinking with the wrong head, okay? So this is Hinge, where it's designed to be deleted. It makes so much sense, but it's just not working. And yet, still better than Tinder and Bumble. I'm going to put the Seahawks there. I will put the Broncos there. The Colts. The Eagles. I'll put the Steelers there. I don't buy into them. I'm going to put the... who else will I put in there? Put the Bucks in there. Maybe we put in the Bears. Right, I'll put the Bears in there. So there you go. That's Hinge. The league, one more tier up. Sadly, this is where the Texans are. The league is this app that says, oh, we're so fancy. We're not going to give you so many options. It's not all about swiping and things like that. It's not. But this is how the league tier stacks up. This is where the 49ers are, even though they're 3-3, dealing with all of these injuries. This is where the Packers are. I could put the Bucks here. This is where the Bills are. The Commanders, a fun little development, them being a part of this. The Falcons snuck their way in here. And this is where you are, too. This is the tier that you're in. Don't get mad about it. The league is a pretty good tier to be in. It is a pretty good app. It's I believe I've met some people off of it, right? But it's not Raya. Raya is the app that hasn't even allowed me to get on it. And if you don't think I'm mad that Jake Asmund has somehow got on it and I haven't, oh, I am mad. Just know that. But that's the top, the exclusive one. That's the Chiefs. That's the Vikings. That's the Lions. That's the Ravens. Those are the four best teams in the NFL. You are not quite there yet. Can you get there? Sure. I'd say the 49ers are adjacent despite their 3-3 start. You're not quite there. But you could get there. A win against the Green Bay Packers, that's going to go a long way. So there you go, guys. There you go. People are asking where Grindr rates. Well, despite the rumors, never been on it. I can't tell you about that app experience. Can't do that. You can join us on the text line, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Zach from the 832 suggests kicking it with Pauly as the dating Paul dates, they go disastrously segment. I think it would have to be something that implies dating a little bit more. And I also feel like there's a million kicking it with shows. I know Will Kunkel, Fox 26, there's a show called Kicking It with Kunkel. So we'll work on the title there. But the Texans, of all the dating apps, they're in the tier of the league, which is second highest, but it's not quite Raya. And there you go. It's Gallant and George, no Joe, just Paul. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stay put.
You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
I haven't watched a second of baseball since the Astros season ended because as a baseball casual, I believe that baseball only exists here in Houston, Texas when the Astros are good and when they're still playing. So I refuse to watch the Yankees in the ALCS. I refuse to watch the Dodgers in the NLCS. But I am totally fine talking about the end of the Astros season now a couple of weeks later with my good friend Jeremy Booth from KHOU. He also hosts a baseball podcast, Extra Bases, with Bristol and Booth. Jason Bristol from KHOU. Jeremy, good to see you again.
You too, man.
That was a rough way to end the season, huh?
You know, I wish it was a surprise. You know, I wish it was a surprise.
You saw it coming.
Yeah, I saw it coming on April 2nd.
April 2nd? I mean, saw it that far away?
Yeah.
I kept lying to myself.
Here's the thing. A lot of people would think that would work. It works some places. It's okay. Not going to work everywhere. And by that, we are talking about the much discussed.
Yeah.
Much debated, much argued, and I wish I could stop smiling.
Because you're doing a little victory lap.
I was doing all kinds of cabbage patch, and I was like jumping up and down, and I air fiving. I really wasn't. I was sad that it got this far. Paul, here's the thing. The Astros are a better team than what we saw. Okay, they're a better team in the regular season. A better team in the postseason. I didn't want them to play the Tigers. Tigers is a club I said they didn't want to run into because they were hot. I know other people said the same thing. It's not like that's the only guy that said that one, but Tigers are hot. And AJ walked him in and even said, someone let the Tigers get hot. That's what happened. Reality. Astros are better than they played. And the statistics for as analytically leaning as the game has become, as analytically inclined as the Astros have been for a decade, regardless of the front office, and as analytically preferential,
this was a deep sigh,
that the state of the fans of the game seem to be, right? Certainly the ones that decide to throw all this stuff on us at X, right? Or me.
Yeah.
At X. You know, they wanted Alvarez or Tucker to hit second because it made more sense that your best hitter gets more plate appearances. I get it. But not all people are created equal. Not all teams are created equal. And in this scenario, If you have a problem with Alex Bregman hitting second, then you need to get your head examined. He's a pretty good player. And he's about to go show the world on this free agent market what kind of good player he is, right?
Yeah.
The stats were lopsided. Without getting into the stats, and you know, we're going to
I'll read them in a second. But basically what you're saying is, and you said this with us multiple times this past season, the Astros are better when Alex Bregman is hitting second, and when after that they're putting Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez in the lineup. And the numbers specifically, I'll just read them right now. The Astros were 40-45 with Tucker and Alvarez hitting second this year. They were 42-24 with Alex Bregman hitting second. I'm a big believer that sometimes the simplest explanation for something is the reason that something is going the way that it's going. And as you said to us earlier in the year, Bregman's patience at the plate, especially considering how quick Jose Altuve at bats can be,
absolutely,
is huge to help the guys after him in the lineup see what pitchers are throwing and potentially adjust to that. And to set the scene for after the Astros season came to an end, we're all in the press conference room, and Jason Bristol from KHOU, your colleague over there, asks the question about those numbers, and Jeremy just turns around and just stares me deep into my eyes with this annoyed look because he was so annoyed that the Astros didn't think about this. And you were right. So you get to do your dance here. I feel like that could have at the very least made things a little bit differently offensively. The offense as a whole was so bad in that series against the Tigers. How many runs are we talking about as a difference? But considering how well Bregman was hitting, I would have liked to see Bregman get more at-bats in a series considering Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez were probably not 100%.
Well, let's unpack the cues that we got, right? The cues that we got. We have a very early going part of the season where Alvarez is not comfortable in that spot. And here was the answer. He's going to get comfortable. He's fine. He's a professional hitter. Okay. We have a situation where Jeremy Payne at the time is the best hitter on the club. Really was for the going, and he's not hitting second, and we're just leaving him out of that spot. You go down the line, course corrects a little bit. Bregman gets into that, or Tucker gets in there. It's not great. It's better. It's not great. You have more injuries with the hitting, but Tucker's producing. He is producing in that spot. They're just marginally better, marginally. And Tucker gets hurt, and Bregman goes back to his spot that he's used to hitting, which is right behind Jose Altuve and ahead of Yordan Alvarez, and they get on fire. They go into first place and they're producing runs, and all of a sudden these pitching injuries don't hurt as bad and the stress on the bullpen's different. We're scoring more runs a game, almost a full run better, by the way. And so when you look at the deeper, and these aren't even deep analytics, man, this is just like basic 1962 numbers. When you look at more runs per game with Bregman in the two spot, Alvarez played more games this year and had far less RBIs over last year, for being in a situation where you're talking about a guy's got to hit second to produce more runs to get more plate appearances. Well, he did that and produced less runs. Okay. Teams produce less runs. He produces less runs. And Joe says at the end in that same, well, they're interchangeable. No, they're not. They're three different hitters. Bregman is short to the ball, use the whole field, patient. Alvarez is games on the line, pressure situation, need runners on base. When's he really the best, right? Think about how many times we've seen him come through in the postseason. Left on left.
Right.
When he has to lock in up here, doesn't have the ability to take away from at-bats. And then Tucker's an ambush hitter. He's always going to be an ambush hitter. He's going to swing at fastballs. He's going to hit velocity. He's, you know, you can hit him anywhere as long as he's going to get a fastball, and he's going to produce for you. Hit him fifth when he can clear the bases and people are ahead of him. Or fourth in this lineup. They didn't do that. And they ignored every possible stat ahead of them, and they moved Peña around. They moved Diaz around. They left Altuve one, which they should. But they kept playing with this 2-3-4 combination in a way that didn't work. And they get to the playoffs when you have no more tomorrows and you have no more opportunity, and they lose.
Why do you think they did it? And maybe that's a tough question.
No, it's not. It's not for me. I'll tell you why.
Hit me.
I think they did it because when Dusty, well, let's compare it to what Dusty did and AJ did. Those are the two managers before Espada, right?
Right.
It was said to me by somebody else I know in the game who's on another clubhouse. I'm talking about Dusty and AJ. World Series manager, no World Series. 50 years in the game, 50 days in the game, as a manager. These guys had a little more strength to say, we're going to do this our way. This guy didn't. And so, I'm not blaming Dana, because this isn't Dana's forte either, as far as, or his MO, as far as how he goes about it. What I will say is I do think there's somebody in the office who had Crane's ear, which is, it happens. And I think Jim decided to let this guy run with it. And when he put Dana as the GM, Dana has player development over here, which seems to be going through an overhaul. He has scouting on this side, which he's building, which went through an overhaul. And he's got the major league operations, which are, had some pieces left behind. Those guys didn't, weren't gutted. They were there. They're still there, right? So that's the one place he didn't have a chance to make any change. Somebody has his ear. Somebody decided to make a point because statistically they felt that was the right thing to do by looking around the league and told Joe who to hit second. And Joe's falling on the sword.
Man, it sucks for Joe if that's the case. Now, that would be consistent with what a lot of organizations are doing now, where, yes, there's a manager, but there's a reason they're making less money. It seems like the front office is making a lot of the decisions. I'd point to a place that I used to work and cover, the Seattle Mariners. It's very clear that Jerry DePoto is running the show there. Should he still be after the 54% comment going into last year? I don't know.
You know, I'm a former Mariner. That's an ownership comment. That's Jerry falling on the sword for the Stanton.
They family. Are a bunch of whores. Yeah. And I mean, I sat down in a room with them once, and whatever, I could go all day about them. Yeah. They were so sensitive too. I mean, we're talking about the Seahawks to help you out, you losers. But to bring it back to this, Jeremy Booth, KHOU, with us in studio, former baseball scout, what we were discussing is that, hey, the Astros had a lot of success when Alex Bregman was batting second this year. The wins and losses show it, 42-24. And when they had Kyle Tucker or Yordan Alvarez hitting there, they were 40-45, including the postseason.
I mean, it's the simplest possible numbers in front of you. Are we diving so deep into analytics to make a point that we're losing a championship window? If you're Alex Bregman, how do you feel about being moved around over the place? If you're Alvarez and your numbers took a decline because of what you're just doing what the club tells you to do, how do you feel? If you're Kyle Tucker and your numbers are all over the place, how do you feel? You have to go out and get contracts based on this, whether it's here in Houston or somewhere else, and you want to win championships, and now that's been cut into. If you're the pitching staff, people don't think they're related. You and I both know they are. The amount of stress on the staff, on the starters, and on the bullpen, it's emotional. It's leverage, it's intensity, it's strength, it's velocity. It's all these things that take a toll on the body that lead to, wait a minute, injuries and poor performance. And so now you've got a team that's not being used right personnel-wise. And I said this to somebody who was very who's very upset. He was defending Joe. This is a private deal. He was defending Joe. And I said, I'm not blaming Joe. I'm just not blaming Joe. And I think the fans need to not blame Joe.
I don't think it's Joe's fault either.
Yeah.
I mean the lineup, whatever it was, hey, hit the ball. You know,
sure.
It ultimately, that could have helped to have Alex Bregman in that second spot, especially in front of guys that probably would like to see the pitcher that's throwing to them longer than Jose Altuve's very often one pitch at bats,
right?
So that is something that could be different. But I'm with you. I don't think this was on Joe. I felt Joe took a lot of crap this year, the same way that Dusty Baker took a lot of crap last year for a team that certainly still has the talent, but has underachieved for now, we're talking about 24 months straight.
Sure. Now, last year, I gave him a break on the fatigue. That was something Jason pointed out before. A little bit of fatigue. You know, they played so long for so many years, they just kind of broke down. And certainly pitching injuries halfway through didn't help. And McCullers didn't come back at all this year, and neither did, was it Garcia? Was Garcia didn't come back? So, you know, they ran down a little bit. This year, this is all personnel related. They were rested. They were there. They overcame Tucker's gap. This is how they just decided to move guys around. And you know, my question to everybody in the organization, if it's one question, it's not even about the stats, even though that's something to point to. It's not about the wins and losses as a whole. That's something to point to. What didn't you like about the last 7 years? That's my question. What went on the last 7 years that you just didn't like it?
The only 7 years I paid attention to.
That's right. 2017 to now. What didn't you like that decided to let's go away from that formula? You know what's good? We've been winning World Series. We got the same personnel. We're still in a prime window here. I don't like how we did that. Let's try another way. What is that? I don't understand. Verlander's not Verlander anymore, but you got guys that stepped to the front in Hunter Brown, who reinvented himself in front of our eyes.
That was great this year.
You got Ronald Blanco, who was a surprise. You've got Valdez, who is a little inconsistent. You've got Javier, who's hurt. But you had guys step up beyond that. You had Arrighetti come out of nowhere to be year two is always the year for me, but it was a great year. You had guys show up to fill those voids, and you couldn't hit? Since when? Since when can this team not hit, especially when you show that you can produce 5-plus runs a game with that staff, with right. a certain construction of the lineup, and you decide to tear that down? What are we building?
It's a great question, and Jeremy Booth with us in studio from KHOU. So what happens next for Bregman? Do you think Bregman's going to come back? I have been over-examining social media posts. I saw a post that he put on Instagram over the weekend, and I'm not going to lie, this post made me feel like he was talking about, hey, thankful for the past year with the Astros, but he also had that tweet right after they lost to the Tigers. Thank you, Houston, which was right. a little more cryptic. Do you think Bregman will be back next year? Not an immediate no. That's a sign. That's a progress.
I think if Alex comes back here, it's because Alex is such a winning type player. I'm a legacy guy in Houston. My family's in Houston. I love being in Houston. And Altuve said, you know, in the last game, he's going to get involved with Crane and make sure they do everything they can to keep this guy. Jim Crane typically doesn't spend this way on these type of players. With Verlander, who you got to figure is certainly not going to have an option picked up, so that's a different deal. And Presley back on the roster with the vesting innings, right, and appearances. The pitching is going to be a primary focus of where they spend. If they get Garcia back, if they have Valdez and Arrighetti and Blanco and Brown, they have enough to start the year, I think.
It's such a big word, two letters though.
It is.
You know, all of those injuries.
You've got Hader, who needs to be used correctly. You've got Presley back on the roster, like we said. You've got Neris, who can come back. And you've got enough in the bullpen to give you some hope to start the year and get off to a good run right now on the roster without having to do anything else. The money's there. Now, they're bumping up against the threshold luxury tax and what they want to do with it. Verlander not being on the books will help that. Verlander comes back here. It's a pillow contract. It's low dollar, high incentive. It's not anything close to what he was going to get. My feeling is it's 70-30 no. And I say 70-30 no because when you're looking around who's playing in October baseball, if these guys aren't going to make a run right now, you've got the Mets, who maybe it's not a fit, maybe it is. You've got the Yankees, maybe it might be a fit.
Money.
Right? You've got the Padres who aren't a fit. You've got the Dodgers who aren't a fit.
All these teams spend.
But you also have the San Francisco Giants up there who, even though they signed Matt Chapman, there's nothing saying they can't move this guy to second base.
Right, and I think it was interesting that earlier this year, towards the last couple of weeks of the season, that there was that piece in The Athletic with Chandler Rome, and Alex Bregman said that he was open to potentially playing other positions. Maybe, I don't know if it was Bregman himself who said it or if it was Scott Boras who said it for Bregman, but I would imagine Boston also on the table because they need to upgrade their second base
spot. And he plays well up there.
Right, you know? So I think there's a lot of possibilities on the table. I will say, 70% gone, I will take that right now.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know if it's going to be the same if they lose him. I losing Springer, losing Correa, losing Cole, among others, the guys who have left, Charlie Morton, and that they've been able to continue the success has been probably the most impressive part about Agreed. What they've been doing over these last 7 years.
Agreed.
It feels a little different with Bregman. There are a couple of stories this year. I think it was Bregman who picked up that Hunter Brown, hey, maybe the two-seam fastball, you should be throwing it a little bit more. He tells that to him, and all of a sudden, you saw what happened with Brown, where Brown goes from being a guy who we were all like, oh my God, what's going on?
Reliever. Yeah.
To I think Espada said about him going into that game two start, this is one of the best starting pitchers in baseball.
When you know, veteran players are veterans for a reason. They stick around. I don't know, Bregman hasn't hit 10 years yet, but it's coming. And you know, he's a guy that brings us, even since he was a kid, and I say kid at 14 years old when I first started watching him play, brings so much more to the game besides the actual production on the field. He's a baseball rat. He's a worker. He sets the tone. He's good in the clubhouse. You know, when he came up, I was very critical of him, you know, personally, to the point where I think I can say this now, Alex reached out to me.
Oh, wow.
He did. Yeah. And he, it was before the pandemic. He reached out to me and said, because I said no one wants to play with him. At the time, nobody did. Now, outside of Houston, right, guys were on him because he was just – it was the dugout shuffle and it was all the extra talk. And, you know, and then the scandal hit right? And I said, I'll see you in spring training. And then the pandemic hit. And it just never happened. And, you know, ever since then, it's been – I've watched him mature. It's been a – we were going to talk. I said, you sure you want to have this conversation? He's like, yeah, let's talk. I said, all right. And so we go down that line a little bit, and I've come to really respect and appreciate, first of all, not just what I've seen him grow up to be, but what kind of leader he's become in the big leagues. You know, it's akin to Biggio in my mind not being here. This is Biggio Bagwell, him and Altuve. You're right. Springer was treated wrong from the beginning. He was out his first opportunity. Correa never had the same feel for Carlos, even though he was drafted and grown up here. This is different. If Altuve leaves, the world kind of ends. And if Bregman leaves, the world kind of ends. And it's nothing against Carlos and or George or anything like that, who are great players and good people. That's not it. It's just that's how this two work, right? If Yuli Gurriel, fan favorite, okay. Gerrit Cole, everybody liked him, okay. Charlie Morton, everybody liked him. Bye, Charlie. When you start going down the line, that's part of it. And I don't think anybody else has that type of energy here. So it's going to be interesting to see if Crane buys into that. Crane is very big on the Astros staying profitable. I don't know that that is something that is going to help that.
We talked about this a little bit earlier. You were talking about a shift. Someone on the Twitch suggested it was Game 7 of the 2019 World Series where maybe the Astros decided to make that shift. Obviously, things changed that offseason because of the scandal and moving on from both Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch. I think one of the things that's been pretty impressive about them just continuing this success is that they have been willing to let guys walk away and not treat them right. And now all of a sudden it does feel like they're treating guys right. And the problem is it seems to be backfiring spectacularly. For example, Rafael Montero, he has a great year. But as someone who watched him in Seattle, I thought, I don't know if this is going to last, especially with how volatile relievers are.
Right.
Jose Abreu, a lot of the numbers were suggesting that at the very least his athleticism was declining. I don't think anyone thought it would be this bad, but some of the guys they brought in and some of the guys that they rewarded, Verlander, you know, bringing him back again too. I wonder if, you know, treating guys the way that they're supposed to be treated could backfire. Say they give Alex Bregman an extension because it theoretically could age very poorly. I'm just looking at all the ways to nitpick it because honestly, me thinking about this irrationally, Jeremy is somebody who has just enjoyed this run. I want to bring back Bregman and I kind of, I'm thinking to myself, I'll just put it on the credit card. We'll figure it out.
Well, so later. Let's talk about it. So Abreu's what, $20 million? Is that right? He's got one more year on the books.
Oh, God,
okay. And Montero's 13. Is that right?
Yeah.
And he's got one more year on the books, correct? Yeah. They're both 3-year deals?
Yeah.
All right. That's Bregman's money. So when you look at how those decisions on the front side affect the back side, you know, and I'm not going to beat, listen, you know, people go back and forth, and I've listened to this, and I'm going to say this, and I'm not an overly huge, you know, Astros, in my opinion, the Astros did something with me recently that wasn't personal at all, but mm-hmm. It was wrong, in my opinion.
Okay.
We're just going to stop there.
Okay.
Had nothing to do with me individually.
I'm curious.
Well, I'll tell you. It had nothing to do with me individually.
Okay,
but it was
gotcha.
It was the wrong move. It was wrong, and it was unethical, in my opinion.
Okay.
In my opinion. No one else. And I'm not speaking for anybody else when I say that. You know, that said, they had the ability to do it, and they exercised that point, right? So what Jim Crane said that offseason was, basically, this is my team. I think he got complacent. I think he believed in the people that were around him. You know, you don't hear much of, and this isn't against anything against this guy, you don't hear much of Jeff Bagwell anymore, right? You don't hear a whole lot of this stuff
anymore. I don't really want to.
Right, so I feel like he listened to some of the people that were around him that made him give him the answers he wanted to hear, and he plugged a GM too late. Any front office guy, and I mean anybody, whether it's Jeff Luhnow, Ed Wade, Jerry DePoto, no one else is giving Abreu that money. Dana wouldn't have given him that money. But Dana comes in here, and he's got Montero and Abreu. That's $33 million out the door that he never signed on for.
Yeah.
So he's saddled with that contract, and now that comes back, and that affects whether or not they sign Bregman. If you gave Alex Bregman $30 million a year to stay in Houston, he's staying here. Would you rather have one Alex Bregman or one Abreu and Montero combination?
One Alex Bregman.
Right. So if you're looking at your money, that's what Crane has to decide. Does he want to eat that money for a year? Because then it's off the books and then go that way. If he does, Bregman stays in Houston. If he doesn't, Bregman doesn't stay in Houston. That's what it comes down to. The market's going to be 30 to 35.
And look, if all these pitchers get healthy again, that's going to help him out a little bit. But I think the tricky thing is, you probably need to add some bullpen depth. You mentioned earlier using Josh Hader correctly. What were they not doing from a Hader perspective?
To me, there's a rhythm he's got to have. I don't believe he's a true closer. I don't think that exists anymore.
Interesting.
On this team. I think it's whoever's got the ball in the right scenario is who's getting the rock. And for me, it's one inning. That's it. They get one. Presley gets one. He gets one, and it's matchup oriented now. Instead of this is my closer. I don't care what he gets paid as long as he does his job, whenever that job is. Now, in the back of the bullpen, you talk about bullpen help. Assuming Urquidy comes back at some point this year, he's bullpen help. McCullers should never start a game on the mound again. He can start a game in the dugout. He can start a game in the stands. He should never be the starting pitcher. Again, he should be in the bullpen.
It's interesting. I remember on our very station, Keith Law was on with the Killer Bees, and they asked about moving McCullers to the bullpen. And McCullers actually seemed to co-sign it online. And that was, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I said it in 2015.
Hell yeah. Okay? Look at that.
So when it comes to Keith Law, who's a close friend of mine, truthfully, you know, we've talked, and he's in agreement, and most people are in agreement with that. And McCullers didn't have the delivery or the stamina or the durability. He was the second coming of Rich Harden, who many fans may or may not remember. I'm sure you remember him. Canadian kid, right-hander, threw hard, good stuff, could never stay on the mound. And Lance McCullers gets over 100 innings and he breaks. That's not a starting pitcher. Put him in the bullpen, let him throw 60 really good ones, and his money comes off the books too in a year or so. Right?
Yep.
So you have the money to reinvest into the pitching staff. For me, if I'm Jim Crane, I guess this is what it comes down to. I bite the bullet for a year. I put butts in the seats. I continue to get my stadium, which is something I know for a fact is a big deal to them. Okay? The upgrades that need to happen to it. I get some love in the community, so maybe the people vote for that type of deal. I'm keeping Bregman in the building. There's a lot of things that go down the line that as I have become more acclimated and educated on the environment here when it comes to Houston sports. I think that, you know, they're an aging venue. It's a nice venue.
It is, but the air conditioning is...
It's an aging venue.
It's certainly not as good as it used to be.
Correct. And they have things they need to upgrade and fix and need the city's help to do it.
And they need to lower the prices of the margaritas.
Without question. So they need to put winning products so the fans come, so there's a reason to do that. And I think that in this city, which is very emotional... In some ways, even more than places like Boston and New York, which you and I have spent a lot of time in, you know, in LA, it's very emotional. They need to have the guy who's the second pairing of Biggio Bagwell stay in this building, pay him what he's worth, bite the bullet for a year, and have all that stuff come back to you later. I'm with you, in short, say, put it on the credit card and see what happens.
Yeah, F it. Just put it down the road.
Put it on the credit card.
We might not have a world in a couple of years. Just do it later.
Yeah, right. Never know.
He is Jeremy Booth. You can catch him on KHOU. He does a baseball podcast with Jason Bristol from KHOU. Houston Extra Bases. Look it up. Jeremy, it's always a pleasure. We'll do it again. Hopefully, we'll be talking about Alex Bregman returning in the near future.
It's great to be back, man.
Always good. All right, it is Gallant and George. No Joe, just Paul. Stick around.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Will Anderson is Defensive Player of the Week for his 3-sack performance against the New England Patriots. He also had a tackle for a loss and a deflected pass that was intercepted. But it doesn't matter. It's in the past. The Texans are 0-0, and they're on to Green Bay, who they play on Sunday. As far as the Houston Texans go, some bad news on the injury front. This from Aaron Wilson of Channel 2. Kamari Lassiter is expected to be out a few more games, and Jimmy Ward will be out for the Packers game. That does mean more Kalen Bullock. The Texans also made a trade yesterday. They traded running back Cam Akers back to the Minnesota Vikings. They didn't get a lot in return. They got a 2026 conditional sixth-round pick. So the draft after next year's draft, and the Vikings get a 2026 conditional seventh-round pick. Not a fun deal. Not a cool deal. But I guess they feel comfortable in the health of both Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce the rest of the way. I'll be honest, I don't. I don't. I think I'd rather have Cam Akers hanging around.
Yeah, but then it becomes the thing of you can just sign the new Cam Akers because what was Cam Akers? Or maybe this is a J.J. Taylor.
I guess, but come on. He's small.
Vote of confidence.
He of all the guys that they have on the roster, he is the only one that's capable of being productive when he gets a handoff. Dari Ogunbowale, he's a third down running back that's better as a receiver. And J.J. Taylor, I like conceptually what he can do.
Yeah, probably too early.
He's too small.
Yeah.
He's just too small. So if one of these guys goes down, you're going to be in bad luck. I mean, you had bad luck that they were both out for a couple of weeks. But if they're both down, this was your fallback plan. And you didn't really get anything in return for him. I've always wondered how much the Texans like Cam Akers after bringing him in. Or really how much any NFL team likes Cam Akers. It does seem like fantasy football players like him a little bit more than teams do. But he is no longer a Texan. I think on the flagship this morning, the Sean and Seth, they asked Nick Caserio during his weekly appearance with them. And they're buddies. They all like joking around. They asked him, hey, is there going to be a deal made for a corner or a safety? And Nick Caserio did a little pandery, tongue-in-cheek kind of answer about maybe adding a corner or a safety. When we turned the transaction into, was he foreshadowing anything? I think some people are reading a little bit too much into it, but that has been discussed today on Texans Twitter.
Yeah, because it was Payne. Seth Payne did a poll on his Twitter about what position do you want the Texans to make a trade, because everyone saw the Adams and the Coopers trade, and I think every fan base got a little trigger happy for a trade to bolster the team. And Seth Payne's Twitter following voted for a cornerback. And so they asked him, like, oh, so, you know, when you make a trade for a cornerback, whatever, say it's the Texans fans that did it. And he's like, I will do that. So, yeah, they're having fun with Caserio, but I don't know. Maybe they do make a trade for a corner.
I'm a big D'Angelo Ross guy. Always have been. I know this is a random thing to think.
Oh, wow.
To say.
Always has been.
I had no idea that he was playing on Sunday.
None. That's a good thing.
No clue. It is a good thing.
That falls into the it's a good thing.
He is a great special teams player. Great. Capital G. Great. I'm happy that he got that opportunity. I want to see him do it again. We'll see, though. This is going to be a really tough test against a Packers team that likes to shoot the ball down the field.
And they spread it among four different receivers. So it's not as simple as have Stingley travel with one guy or do anything, like scheme something. You're going to have to guard the whole field with LaFleur's offense.
Sticking to the National Football League, for those who didn't hear, Jerry Jones essentially doubled down on his comments that he made on 105.3 The Fan, where he suggested he would replace the hosts asking him tough questions. He said this via Diana Russini of The Athletic, quote, I don't know that I would go as far as calling the volume connotation as yelling, okay? Yelling at the hosts. But the facts are that if I'm going to be grilled by the tribunal, I don't need it to be by the guys I'm paying. I can take it from fans and take it from other people. I take a lot of pride in how fair and how much I try to work with the media. We're brothers and sisters. But I was a little frustrated there today. The wrong ones were doing the questioning. Now, if those had been real fans sitting there, or if there had been people that knew what they were talking about, football people, I might have had a different answer. Okay, Jerry.
That last one's real shot at them.
Yeah.
The guys he talks to. If they're real football people. I get what he's saying, but still.
Jerry, you're not a real football people. And you played at Arkansas. Cool.
Hey, national champion in Arkansas.
Whatever, man. I don't think Jerry Jones knows more about football than I do, and I base that off of having been a Patriots fan growing up. Patriots fan growing up, someone who played football at Arkansas. Who knows more about ball? This applies to many situations, and I think we all know the answer to that question. Anyway, continuing to go around the National Football League, the Jets are such a mess. Oh, my God, they're such a mess, and they're trying to do this little car wash on ESPN where it's Aaron Rodgers with Pat McAfee and, oh, look at the shiny new toy that Aaron has. Here's Devontae Adams showing up on the Pat McAfee show.
Okay, so as soon as you hear the new... What's that? Well, well, well!
Here he is!
to see you, Tay. Good to see you, man. Congrats.
What's up, fellas? Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Look, I like Pat McAfee, but I feel like the majority of that show is a bunch of clapping seals, and especially in that area. Look, the Jets look like crap. Aaron Rodgers threw one of his best players, threw one of his receivers under the bus after that Monday game, and we're just going to move on. Oh, they got Devontae Adams. They're 2-4. They fired their coach less than a week ago, and we're just going to clap like seals.
Yeah.
Ooh, Tay, what's up?
There's so much clapping during on that show. Also, I think I forgot if it was. I was listening to Mina Kimes' podcast. I forgot if it was her or Dominique that pointed out the last 2 weeks the Jets have basically just thrown a smoke bomb the day after embarrassing loss.
First time Woody Johnson's done anything successfully in his life, so credit to him. But Aaron Rodgers and the Jets are all about change. You heard from Woody Johnson. We're looking to change things. Rodgers is the one making this change happen. They just traded for Devontae Adams, who he said in this interview with Pat McAfee is his good friend. And no matter how good Adams is, who's running the show? Obviously, it's Aaron Rodgers, who resents being described as having a role in stabbing Robert Saleh in the back. Does he resent having a role in this? No, he made this happen. And by the way, Rodgers, who threw Mike Williams under the bus on the Pat McAfee show, guess who's now on the trade block? Mike Williams. Oh, they're not related at all? The Jets are letting Aaron Rodgers run the show. And it's not surprising. And honestly, it's better to let Aaron Rodgers run the show than to let Woody Johnson run the show. But how much better actually is it? Not that much better.
Yeah, and it's the letting him run the show while also being indignant that anyone suggests that he runs the show. It's like just so much of the Aaron Rodgers stuff is like, hey, listen, dude, do what you want. Just don't call me an idiot for calling it out.
Exactly.
like we all know what's happening.
One last story in the NFL, and maybe Jerry Jones should have looked into this. Tom Brady unanimously voted by NFL owners to become a minority owner in the Las Vegas Raiders. Tom Brady's black. I don't see color. Is he Hispanic? Not sure. All I know is he's a minority owner.
Do they count the Irish as a minority? Like it's the 1920s?
They should. It is kind of unfair that we were a minority and very persecuted, and all of a sudden we just forget about it. We just forget it. We're just going to forget that everyone called us drunks, and we might have been drunks, but hey, redheaded stepchild, what the hell? What the hell? Implying our women are harlots? Come on. Unbelievable. Anyway. Italian people, too. Like they shouldn't forget either.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But anyway, hey, Tom Brady, minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Italian people, too. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
And now Brady won't be able to, do any of the stuff that goes into being a
chestnut checkers. He's Tom Brady. He doesn't need to do any of the stuff. Yeah. He is the voice of God.
Now he just comes down from the mountain once a week, doesn't talk to anybody, doesn't do anything, and just goes, see that play? They're running cover two.
And he's going to have a prominent say in what the Raiders do.
I'm sure he will.
I mean, it's smarter to listen to Tom Brady, 6-time Super Bowl winner, than Aaron Meodgers, who is a 4-time MVP winner.
That's a good.
Yeah, I couldn't really figure out how to get the I, because there's no I in Rodgers, and there's not really anywhere to put an M-E there either. But Rodgers is all about him, and he's running the show in New York, and Tom Brady is about to turn the Las Vegas Raiders into the greatest dynasty in NFL history.
No disrespect to Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell.
Yes,
Of course, no disrespect to Aiden O'Connell. After what we just talked about. So Tom Brady is the best quarterback right now involved with the Raiders.
This officially closes the door on him playing.
Yes.
He cannot play if he is an owner.
Although, they could probably move some things around.
Is he going to sell his stocks or
whatever? Yeah, just sell it, buy it back, whatever.
That would be a fun move in the middle of a game in Vegas. He comes out.
They cut to his box and he's furiously signing something.
The stadium blocks out all the light, just goes black, and then they like show a montage of Tom Brady in the Tuck Rule game. And it's full circle.
They start with the Tuck Rule game.
Full circle. And then he just comes in wearing the silver and black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be sick if you did some sort of David Copperfield Vegas kind of entrance. But yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, maybe if they do like a charity game there, they can do that at Allegiant Field. Maybe if they do a flag football old timers game. Yeah, maybe though.
He's Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George. No Joe, just Paul. Coming up next, where does this rank as far as tough games for the Texans the rest of the way? Two, who'd you rather have, C.J. Stroud or Jordan Love? Plus, we got to figure out a name for a theoretical Paul's Bad at Dating segment going forward for this program. Stay put, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. And on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. First, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie and MyBookie.ag. You go to MyBookie.ag, you enter promo code BET975, and you're going to make an initial deposit. Guess what? They're going to double that deposit right away. You can bet on anything, anytime, anywhere, with a little extra cash. And by the way, don't forget about tomorrow. MyBookie on Thursdays has Free Boost Thursdays, weekly risk-free boosts where you can bet without a sweat. If your bet hits, you win big. If it doesn't, MyBookie will refund your wager. That's pretty sick. I don't know how they're still operating in the black, but hey, don't ask any questions. Just go to the website, use that promo code BET975. You can play in the Super or Squares contests that they have for football games too. And there's a loyalty program, MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more you win. The more you play, you go up in tiers for loyalty rewards and more epic promotions, giveaways, comes through MyBookie Plus. It's MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.ag.
This is ESPN 97.5.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts, we do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.